Today on Focal Point, Pastor Mike Fabares on the cutesy portrayals of Christ.
I'm not big on nativity scenes. I'm not against them. But sometimes they get a little too cute when the sheep look like cartoon characters. And because there's no time when we are tempted to think like the world, that Jesus is some domesticated little baby in a manger, and that's a pretty cute story, and he lived a good life, and he's a great example for us. We need to elevate our view of Christ. Elevate your view of our King.
Everyone loves a rags-to-riches story, but what about those stories where an ordinary citizen goes undercover, then, when you least expect it, he turns into a superhero with superpowers, ready to save the world. Well, that's just an inkling of the shock and amazement we'd feel if God appeared right now before our very eyes. Today on Focal Point, Pastor Mike Fabares presents a riveting reminder of who we're really dealing with when we come to God. And to start, we're beginning at the end.
I'd like you to turn not to Luke as we get started, we'll get there, but to the last book of the Bible, the book of Revelation, about the eternal, omnipotent, sovereign Lord who is worshipped in heaven in a way that if you were to see it for 10 minutes would blow your mind as clearly it did John's. Go back to chapter 1. I know you think I'm preaching on Luke today, but go back to Revelation chapter 1. Look at verse number 12. Rev 1, verse 12, I turned to see the voice that was speaking to me, and I turned and I saw seven golden lampstands. And in the midst of the lampstands was one like a son of man. And he says he's clothed in a long robe with a golden sash around his chest. And his hairs, the hairs of his head were white. Now trust me, John knew Jesus well, walked with him through Galilee and Judea, and he knows that his hair was not white. What, he had a hair day or some of the makeover. What, your hair's not brown anymore? What's going on here? No, it's white. It's white like wool. It's white like snow. And his eyes, you know, those brown Jewish eyes of Christ. No, now they're flaming fire. And his feet, here's the symbolism. It's so rich. But the idea of his authority and his established authority, it's like burnished bronze refined in a furnace. And his voice, it was really sweet and compassionate and merciful. Kind. Oh, it felt so good to hear his voice again. No, it's like the roar of many waters. In his right hand, seven stars. And out of his mouth came these wonderful, compassionate words. It was like he was, again, talking on the Sea of Galilee there about the lilies. No, sword this time. A sharp, two-edged sword. It stung, it hurt, it wounded. And his face, oh man, now his face is no longer that visage that I remembered from my time walking for 3.5 years with this Christ. Now it's like the sun. I can't even look at it. It's like the sun shining in its full strength. John sees now the glorified Christ as he's falling down here on the island of Patmos. And clearly, as he falls down and he's in fear and trembling, he remembers. This is the glimpse of the Christ I saw in Luke chapter 9, in this event when my view of Christ was instantly recalibrated. But this scene that I want you to finally turn to in Luke chapter 9, beginning in verse 28, they're about to have their view of God radically transformed. Transformed by the visage and the image and the figure of Christ being radically transformed before them. Let me read it for you. Beginning in verse 28, we'll read through verse 36. Now about 8 days, about a week later, after these sayings, he took with him Peter and John and James. And he went up to a mountain to pray. And as he was praying, the appearance of his face was altered. His clothing became dazzling white. And behold, two men were talking with him, Moses and Elijah, who appeared in glory and spoke of his departure. Whose departure? Christ's, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now Peter, verse 32, and those who were with him were heavy with sleep. But when they saw this, they became fully awake. They saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. And as the men were parting, they're about to leave, Peter says to Jesus, "Master, it is good that we are here. Let us make three tents, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." Luke adds, not knowing what he had said. Verse 34, and as he was saying these things, a cloud came and overshadowed them. Okay, so the cloud was there with these people. Now we're in it. And they were afraid as they entered the cloud. And a voice came out of the cloud saying, very simply, three phrases, "This is my son, my chosen one, listen to him." And when the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone. End of scene. And they kept silent and told no one in those days anything of what they had seen. Interesting text. I want to break it down and just imagine putting yourself in the sandals of the disciples and seeing Christ being woken up, or as the text is a little unclear in verse 32 as he goes back to describe the scene, maybe deep in sleep or heavy with the desire to sleep, groggy, tired, probably late if they're tired, I don't know. They're so busy they can be tired at any time in the afternoon or evening, early evening, maybe late evening. But they see this and they're woken up by it. His face is radically changed, his clothing is different, and with him are Moses and Elijah, which of course are identified in verse 30. It says in verse 32, they first just saw two men. Of course, they don't know him. If I brought out Moses and Elijah here, you wouldn't know who they were. You don't know what they look like. Did they have an introduction time? This is Peter. Peter, this is Moses. I don't know. But they found out clearly because Christ tells them these are the two important people of the Old Testament that often are the figureheads of the scripture. We talk about, and Jesus put it this way, the law and the prophets. The law was given by Moses. The prophets, the quintessential typified spokesman for God in the rest of the Old Testament, Elijah. Two of the most important people that we've seen. And if you really want to freak out here a little bit, both of these had strange exits from the planet. Moses died of natural causes there. And you know, as he's looking over across at the promised land, but his body, we learn, was disputed between Michael the archangel and Satan. Remember that? Who cares? Why not just bury him and move on? Why would Satan ever want to argue for the body of anybody? I mean, what's that all about? Well, apparently, we have here not just a vision. This is not some hologram. This is the actual glorified body of Moses. Because at that point, and I conjecture, I understand, but filling in the gaps here, we've got God going through the dispatch of Michael, bringing up this body, much like our bodies will be brought up at the rapture, glorified, reunited with Moses. And Elijah, you know how he left the planet, don't you? How did he leave the planet? Chariot came down. Now here's Elisha watching this happen, and I know people think, well, he went right to heaven. Well, whatever that means, think that through. Have you flown in a plane and had all the data there on the screen, and it says how fast you're going and where you're going, and then sometimes you'll see some of those planes even give you the temperature outside, and you go, oh, I can't believe it's that cold outside. Really? Yeah, keep going. Do the Branson thing and get into space. You know how cold that is? Really cold. So cold it's incomprehensible. Not to mention it's a vacuum. You know this. You know what vacuums do to bronchial tubes inside your lungs? That body, the fallen temporal human molecular structure that Elijah lived in, didn't just go whoop right up and then they hung out in the living room somewhere in some celestial palace. All right, you don't have to get up very high until you die. Biologically die. Just like Moses biologically died, the difference was, much like our quote-unquote death, it won't be much like a death because our software will simply have its housing changed. As 1 Corinthians 15 says, in a twinkling of an eye. And as Paul makes very clear for the last generation, when the trumpet is sounded, our bodies have to immediately metamorphize. They have to change into something that is now glorified and impervious to death. And there's nothing that will make it implode or explode or freeze. Here we have these glorified bodies like Christ. And we can only assume, because there's no body, even though they went out searching for Elijah's body later, they thought, well, this whirlwind kind of put him up. We got to go find his body and bury it. They never found his body. Why? Because we assume, and rightfully so, that he was directly translated, much like our rapture translation, into the presence of God. So if you go to heaven right now, which I trust that you believe you're going to. I believe at least in two cases, and we might argue for a third, but think about this. You've got not only Christ's body, but two other glorified bodies there, Moses and Elijah. I know this is speculative theology, but it's interesting, isn't it? These two bodies, glorified, in glory, return. You've got flanked here by the Messiah, the writer of the law, the quintessential preaching prophet who represented the writing prophets. That had to blow your mind, because here you have the one clearly exalted above Moses, who's quintessentially important in Jewish theology, and Elijah, which is so important if you read the Bible. He represents so many things all the way through the last chapter of the Old Testament, Malachi chapter 4. And Christ now is singled out. Spotlight comes on him. God speaks about him. Peter's befuddled, saying things that Luke thinks are silly there, and I don't want to stretch it, but clearly this is not a good commentary on his comment there in verse 33. What did this do to them? Change their view of Christ. Number one, we need to elevate our view of Christ. Elevate your view of our King. I know you say he's the King of Kings, Lord of Lords. You need to elevate your view of him. Because there's no time when we are tempted to think like the world, that Jesus is some domesticated little baby in a manger, and that's a pretty cute story, and he lived a good life, and he's a great example for us. I want you to think of the dedication of the temple in Solomon's day. Now, if you don't know much about biblical history, before the splitting of the kingdom, 10th century BC, you've got a unified kingdom. Under David's leadership, you had all the borders secure, all the borders advanced, and the warrior, the great fighter, the skilled fighter David, had established peace in the kingdom, and the baby born with the silver spoon in his mouth ascended the throne, Solomon. It was a rocky ascension, but he got to the throne, and he sat there in peace with all the things in there. Talk about silver spoon. Silver didn't even matter anymore. The Bible says gold was all that mattered because silver was so common. And he built a building for God to be worshipped in. And that building was the most magnificent building, I guarantee you, that anybody in the ancient world had ever seen. And the Jews were there at the dedication with thousands of people assembled. And Solomon the king, in the regalia of the monarch, stands up in front of this outlandish monument of human achievement and architecture, and talk about opulence with the gold everywhere. And he dedicates it in a prayer. And he says in 1 Kings chapter 8, I just want you, God, to realize that we know what we're doing here. And when it comes to knowing that you could never descend to fit into a building, I realize that. Heaven and the highest heavens can't contain you, much less this building that I've built. We know you will never fit into an opulent temple. And yet 1,000 years later, a gangly 12-year-old, dealing with his first pimples on his forehead, walks in while his parents were heading home and sits down with rabbis and priests and starts showing them, this is no normal 12-year-old, stymied, amazed at the wisdom of this 12-year-old. Clearly, the gospel writers understand. Luke has already presented to us early in the book, this is God incarnate. If the building, as he walks through the courtyard, the outer court of the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, where Solomon had built this opulent temple, now you have not embodied in that grand building that he was in the shadow of, but in a 12-year-old body, was the God of the universe. That the most amazing scene you could ever imagine, with 24 of the most important people in the world constantly getting out of their thrones and worshiping this lamb that was slain, walked God incarnate. Heaven and the highest heavens can't contain you. That was a true theological statement. But here's the mind blower. Philippians 2 says, even so, the one who existed with all of the credentials and attributes of God emptied himself and took on the form of a man, and being found in the likeness of men, was willing to go to the cross. I'm not big on nativity scenes. I know you think I'm a curmudgeon and all that. We have them. I'm not against them. But sometimes they get a little too cute when the old precious moment starts putting out, you know, nativity scenes. Then I start to, okay? When the sheep look like cartoon characters and the little baby Christ is like, you know, 16 pounds. And I struggle with the domestication of that scene. Not that I don't believe that there was a brown-eyed baby born in a Bethlehem stable. I believe that. But you'd better keep your theology intact with Revelation 4 and 5 clearly in view. Because as Jesus prayed in John 17, he said, "Return to me the glory I had before I came and before the foundation of the world." So I know this image that I just caught in Revelation 1 and Revelation 4 and 5 is nothing new for Christ. He'd had that glory with the worship of the four living creatures and all of the angels and everybody that was ever there, perfected by the coming purchase of Christ on a cross. They all gave their glory and their honor and their worship to the second person of the Godhead. That needs to be kept in view. And while, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer plays in the background and Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, every now and then they still rotate in the mall songs, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, written by Charles Wesley, that knew a little bit about biblical theology. And when you hear that carol this year, can you just stop and listen, particularly if they happen to play the second verse? You know these familiar words, don't you? Christ by highest heaven adored. We just read about it. Christ, the everlasting Lord, who was, who is to come. Late in time, behold him come, finally. Here he is, offspring of the virgin's womb. No normal birth here. Veiled in flesh. You know what that means? Veiled in flesh. The Godhead see. Do you see that, or is it just a cartoon character to you? Just a cute little scene of a baby in a manger. Veiled in flesh, the Godhead see. Hail. You know what hail means, right? Salute, hail. Bow down. Worship, acknowledge. Hail the incarnate deity. Pleased with us in flesh to dwell. Jesus, our Emmanuel. What does Emmanuel mean? God with us. God with us. I think when Charles penned those words, he had God in view, which is a little different than a lot of our views of the man upstairs or the big man or whatever. Veiled in flesh, the Godhead see. Sometimes it's hard because of the package things come in. I had a meeting this week with a very important and influential and powerful, rich businessman. And you know, when you're preparing for meetings like that, and this is one for the good of the church, and I'm going there to represent the church, and a very important meeting, I can't tell you all the details right now, but I'm sitting across from this guy, and I walk in, and I think I'm in the wrong place. Looking at this guy, and I'm thinking, this is who I drove up here to have a meeting with? I mean, literally, if you saw this guy walking down the street, you'd think he'd reach out his hand and ask for spare change. And yet, the more I talked, the more I realized, this is no transient who wants my spare change. This guy's powerful, well-connected, rich. This guy could pick up the phone and do amazing things. The power he wielded, the money he had at his disposal, the people at his beck and call to do things all over Southern California. And I thought, wow, the package really belies the person I'm talking to here. I mean, talk about not looking the part. This man didn't look the part, and I guarantee you, the image of Christ that you have in your mind certainly doesn't look the part. Any time between the birth of Christ in Bethlehem and even the scene of his resurrection as he speaks with the disciples and the Marys there at the tomb and Martha, I'm just telling you, that belies who he really is. You got to elevate your view of our King. You want a diagnosis passage on this, you got to look up Malachi chapter 1. We have no time for it now, but do a study of Malachi chapter 1. And when you're done with that, go to Hebrews chapter 12, verses 22 to the end of the chapter. And use those passages in your own study, because I have no time to deal with it. But look at the things in your life, like your prayer life, your service to Christ, your sacrifice, your giving, the energy you bring, the attention you bring to God. And say, you know what, that really is a diagnostic of how I view this Christ that I say I worship and follow. And perhaps you'll recognize we have a long way to go in elevating our view of Christ. And when you think you've arrived, you'll learn more about the greatness and majesty of Christ, and you'll continue to almost be frustrated in a pursuit of making sure you're not a mental idolater by settling into a view of God that is not accurate. Verse 32 of our passage, Peter and those who were with him, that's James and John, were heavy with sleep. When this whole scene started, we're going back now, recapitulating a bit of the setting of this, and here we have, hey, you know what, when this all started, you had the disciples heavy with sleep. Now, that's a bit grammatically ambiguous, though some commentators would argue, you know, that this is clear. The idea is we're not sure whether they're groggy and really tired and they want to sleep, or whether they're in sleep. Nevertheless, they're not at their best. They're not alert. And yet, when this comes, it says, middle of verse 32, they become fully awake because they saw his glory. And these two men who had yet to be identified, they see two men standing there with him. So we have them being roused from their slumber, or at least their groggy physical attitude. They're roused now to see the glory of Christ in these two heavy hitters, two of the most important men of the Bible, Moses and Elijah. And as they were parting, we don't get much other than we learned earlier, they're talking about the task of Jesus to go to Jerusalem. Peter says to Jesus, whoa, Jesus, wait, Master, it's good that we're here. Let us make three tents, three tabernacles, three booths. This is the same word we use in the Feast of the Booths when they go and set up their leafy little tents. Let's get some foliage here out and let's make some tents, some tabernacles for them. We'll make one for you. We'll make one for Moses and Elijah. Now, I don't know what you make of that, other than the motivation was clearly, let's keep these guys around. Can we hang out here for a while? Luke, uncharacteristically, gives us a comment here after the dash at the bottom of verse 33. And he adds his commentary and says, not knowing what he had said. Now, clearly he knew what he said. This is an idiom to talk about the fact, he didn't know what he was talking about. Luke says, that was just not the right response. What was he thinking saying that? Silly, not right. Inappropriate for the setting. I put it this way, Alan, we need to shake off any complacency, any kind of that casualness, any kind of thing that would lead us to say things like Peter said that just are not the sharpest, smartest, insightful, connected, thoughtful things to say or do. Sure, it's a play, I suppose, on the physical fatigue and grogginess of them in verse 32. They were awakened by this vision. But they weren't awakened really well enough in their own thinking about how they should perceive the greatness of Christ here. And Luke comments on that.
You're listening to Pastor Mike Fabares, delivering a Focal Point message titled, When Your Focus is in Need of Adjustment. Now to hear it again, go to focalpointradio.org. Our biggest problem isn't that we have big problems. It's that our view of God is too small. And that's why Focal Point renews its commitment daily to awaken your thinking with these daily studies straight from the written word of a great and holy God. And your faithful generosity is getting it out to those who need to hear it in a way that commands due respect and obedience. How are you doing as an ambassador of that kind of God? Call in your generous donation to keep the voice of Focal Point going strong on stations like this one across the country at 888-320-5885 or go to focalpointradio.org. We'll say thanks with the book All the Prayers of the Bible. All the passion, the beauty, the necessity of efficacious prayer are celebrated in this remarkable reference. Author Herbert Lockyer paints the backstory to each prayer and its effects, and a sampling includes prayers for when you're grateful, in danger, afflicted, or in need of healing. It's all here in All the Prayers of the Bible, and it's all yours when you give by calling 888-320-5885. And if you're just checking us out, you can still help us out. Just call us and let us know you're listening, and we'll be able to make some strategic decisions to expand in your area. So call in at 888-320-5885, and we'll send you a special gift from Pastor Mike, his free message, How to Pray and Making Sure That We Do. Or look for it online at focalpointradio.org. Well, that's all the time we have for today. I'm Dave Drewy. Glad you could join us. Come back again tomorrow when Pastor Mike Fabares concludes our message. That's Thursday on Focal Point. Today's program was produced and sponsored by Focal Point Ministries.